and start off by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1275. I know we have a lot of material to cover, and when we get a quorum, I might suspend this hearing and take action on these other two bills that are just going to take less than a minute each, and come back to 1275. Apologies. Start by briefing Representative Williams.
Here's Paul.
We can do it like this.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 1275 proposes a change in the corporate income apportionment formula, which is a formula that apportions income among states for corporations who have operations beyond Oregon. Currently, we have a three-factor formula using sales, payroll, and property. In 1991, the legislature double-weighted sales, so we now have a formula which is 50% sales, 25% payroll, 25% property. What Senate Bill 1275 proposes to do is to shift over a five-year period to a single sales formula. So it would gradually go to 100% sales, and you can see in your revenue impact statements there that it would start off in 2001, in which it would go to a 0.6 sales factor for the 2001 tax year, and 0.2 for both payroll and property. And then it would phase down 5% each year for property and payroll until it gets to zero. And each of those years, the sales factor would rise by 0.1% to get to 100% in 2005 over the five-year period. Now, there is a revenue impact, and this revenue impact was discussed pretty extensively in the Senate Revenue Committee. We think there will be some negative impact on revenue in the 9901 period as estimated or quarterly advance payments are affected in the last 6 months of the biennium. And that accounts for that minus $6 million. And next biennium, in the phase-in, we have a minus $57 million revenue impact. The revenue impact estimate is based on an analysis of corporate returns for 1996. And if you look at your sheet there entitled Phase-In Sales Only Formula, this shows you by sector who's affected by the shift to a single sales. And if we were to do this with the 96 returns that we know what all the individual corporate taxpayers paid, and Revenue Department ran through the individual returns for us, you can see that the major tax reduction would occur in the manufacturing sector. And really, that's not surprising when you think about how a single sales formula would work. It's the manufacturers who have the production facilities, the payroll in Oregon, and that would no longer be a factor in apportioning their corporate income. Only the sales piece would be. And so what you would do is increase corporate income tax burden for firms that are producing outside the state and selling into Oregon. The other sectors that are affected, the finance, insurance, and real estate sector, would have a significant reduction in their tax burden. Because they, again, have the fairly large payroll and property in Oregon. Wholesale trade would be both a large reduction for some wholesale trade firms and a large increase for others, as you can see there in the two columns. On net, the losers would pay $35 million more. The winners would pay $105 million less based on these 1996 returns. So that's a $70 million reduction in taxes based on those returns. The other way of looking at it, to give you a sense, is on the by size. And the next page shows you federal taxable income and the change, again, using those 96 returns, the change in the tax burden by size. And the interesting thing here is if you look at firms with less than $1 billion in the federal taxable income, it's basically a wash. It's actually a net increase of $1.1 million. So it's essentially a wash. The big change is in the greater than $1 billion, the large firms. And there we have 57 large firms which end up paying more taxes because their sales factor is the important factor in the apportionment formula for them. And they have a net increase of $14 million. But we do have a relatively small group of firms, 14 greater than $1 billion, who do have a significant tax reduction because they have large property and payroll factors here in Oregon, and that amounts to a net reduction of $85 million for that group, and that's really where the revenue impact is. Some of that impact is due to particular firms having good years in the mid-90s from which these returns are taken, so that may be partially a factor explaining that. Finally, Mr. Chair, I did prepare a memo for the Senate committee based on some of the testimony we had had, and just really kind of reviewing the relationship between taxes and economic development. And we've had some discussion in this committee as well about how we arrive at our revenue impact analysis and do we account for the behavioral changes and secondary effects and so forth. The simple answer is we do use static analysis, and this using these 96 returns is an example of that, which we've got that hard data. We try to project it out, but we don't assume any behavioral changes as a result of the change in the tax law. We essentially don't have the modeling capacity to do this at this time. And we've talked about the tax incidence model, which would be a step in that direction. But right now, we don't have that capacity to do it. And that's really a key reason why the static analysis shows a revenue loss, is if you look at those 96 returns, we know we've got some very large taxpayers who are contributing a great deal to corporate income taxes, and they have significant property and payroll in Oregon. So, you know, from that perspective, it's not surprising that we would see a revenue loss from this proposed change in the short term. The issue of taxes and economic development, and again, I think it's something we've talked about, that economists argue that all taxes have behavioral effects and that they are a factor influencing economic development. The caveat here, the but part, is a lot of other factors influence economic development, such as proximity to markets, labor costs and quality, energy costs, land costs, so on and so on. So, a whole series of factors affect economic development, and in most cases they're more important. The taxes are more of a marginal factor. In terms of the relationship between this particular proposed change and long-term growth, there is a well-established link here with economic theory, and that is that economic growth is driven by what we call the export or base sectors. Those are the sectors that are producing in your state or in your region and selling outside. So when those sectors are doing well, generating jobs, generating income, they have multiplier effects, create jobs in retail and services. And this is a standard accepted model for explaining regional growth. And indeed, it's the model that has been used over the years for this state's economic forecast. So there is a clear link there with theory and this proposal. Obviously, those export-based sectors would really benefit from this proposed change because they're the ones who would see a reduction in their tax burden because of the property and payroll factors. The final thing I want to say is that while that is well established in economic theory, there are a large number of economists who argue it hasn't predicted growth very well over time. There are other factors, such as the overall economic environment, so-called supply factors, that are far more important. The truth is, as I've said in my last sentence here in the memo, that economic base theory is only one theory in the long term, and the truth is that no one theory explains long-term economic growth very well. We don't have a simple answer to what makes some regions do better than others, whether it be tax policy or labor force training policy or any single policy that would give states or regions a clearly a quantifiable advantage.
Okay, thank you very much. This is you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Phillips. I represent Nike.
I was hopeful earlier today Senator Beyer was here and he was going to help kick this off.
Right. Yeah, he said he's next door when he's available.
If you could, that'd be great. What I'd like to do is today, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, is briefly give you an overview, and obviously as soon as Senator Beyer gets here, let him speak, because I have no choice, he'd get to speak anyway, so might as well be kind about that. Then turn it over to industry representatives from Nike, Tektronix, ESCO, and others who are here, and then we have a presentation from Oregon Tax Research and myself, based on the tax study that was done last year. But in summary, Mr. Chair, to my opening remarks, this bill had a number of hearings in the Senate committee. We appreciate you and the chairman of the Senate committee helping us work with Department of Revenue and Mr. Warner. Mr. Warner has given lots of thought and advice to this. The bill passed the Senate 23-5 because of Senator Beyer's assistance. And with that,
I'll get out of the way. Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Mr. Kennedy, for the record, I'm Senator Lee Beyer from District 21, which is Lane County. What did you tell me, Paul?
I just was opening it up.
Warming them up, huh?
Paul gave us some background.
Excuse me?
Paul wanted to give us background on the bill.
We spent a considerable amount of time on this in the Senate Revenue Committee, and by the way of introduction, Senator Miller, our chair, wanted to be here, but unfortunately, it was his turn to deliver his daughter to school. This morning, his wife is out of state, so he sends his regrets, but is supportive of this bill. It passed out of our committee unanimously. And I guess one of the points I'd like to make, I think these things and the issue of tax expenditures and tax credits and deductions has obviously been taking up both your time and our time on the Senate side this session, and I would like to just be real clear at the start, this is that we, as we talked about it, did not view this as either a tax credit or a tax expenditure. And I know you'll get into the details of that, but I think the thing to keep in mind is you're not talking about credits against existing taxes. You're talking about our changing tax rates. You're talking about how you apportion a corporation's income in the United States totally. And this has been evolving, and I know you're getting into the three factors, so I'm not going to go into the details on that one. You know it as well as I do. But the issue, keep in mind, I would suggest that this matter of how you deal with this has been something that's been evolving in tax policy among the states for, I think, at least 50 years they've been using the apportionment formula. As I mentioned to my Senate colleagues when we were going, one of the things to keep in mind is that this is not a partisan issue. If you look back to the first major change that Oregon had, and I believe it was 1983, under Governor Vic Atiyah and a democratically controlled legislature in both houses, the state of Oregon made their first major change, and it was the unitary, I always lose that word, unitary tax structure, which was primarily driven by rapid investment of offshore, primarily Asian companies, which had taken policies fairly clearly that they were not going to invest in any state that had a unitary tax. A unitary tax that says not only attacks the United States gained income, but worldwide income. And virtually those countries and companies from outside felt that was unfair. Our legislature, democratically controlled legislature, at the urging of the governor, change that along with most of the states around us to the policy of not doing that any longer. The comment from offshore was if you don't do that or if you change the policy, we will consider investing in your state. And the record following that, it was a faith walk. As you'll probably notice, those of you from Portland, you got one significant amount of Japanese investment and Asian investment after that was changed. Probably would not have happened if you believe what they were saying, had that not occurred, and had not before that, a lot of it was going to California. Following that, the next major change came, and I believe it was the 1989 session, again, a democratically controlled legislature with a Democratic governor in place, Neil Goldsmith, who urged a change in the tax policy in terms of the three factors. And we went from a three-factor equally weighted system to a double factor on sales tax, again, largely trying to get the advantage And again, if you remember, at one in the fact of 91, the early 90s were probably the largest economic growth period in Oregon's history. Again, most of that gain, frankly, was in the north end of the valley with large investment in manufacturing. So here we are again, and I think the question that you're going to consider is, what difference does it make? If you look at the map that if Paul hasn't given you, he will give you, you look at the number of states that are making changes, and you'll find that there are about a third of the states that have already made changes to either single factor or what they're calling super sales weighted factors to try and, I guess, get an economic advantage. And so we're there. There are a number in the West that are considering this. Oregon has the opportunity to be first, and I guess the way we looked at it in the Senate is it is likely to happen. We believed that regardless of how we feel about the fairness of the three factors, sometime within the next decade, Oregon is going to move to a single sales factor apportionment formula because we'll have to. Everybody else will, and we can't afford the economic dislocation without doing it. So the question was, is there an advantage in being first? We thought there was. The advantage is if you can get out there and encourage, let people know that Oregon is thinking of that and will be doing it in a period of time where we're talking about phasing in, that you might be able to offset the economic loss in the under the standard sort of way of looking at the, we call it Paul, the static revenue analysis. Look at that, and you may get onto the dynamic side, which is very hard to predict. The only thing we know about that is that it occurs. If you do it right. And by going in with a 5-year ramp up starting in 2001, we might be able to balance it, in fact, make some gains. That was our thoughts as we went in. One of the issues is, and I know a discussion that came up a lot on our floor is, are we giving businesses an unfair advantage? And I would encourage you to keep in mind that you're talking about an apportionment formula. It is good for some businesses and not good for others. That's just the reality, and I think all tax policies in the states work that way. Keep in mind that all of us pay taxes, whether we like it or not, in other states. And I'll use the example of Alaska. Alaska has a petroleum tax, an extraction tax that they put in. If you look at the tax research reports that come out, they all factor that in as taxes paid in Oregon. That's a reality, and what they're trying to do, right or wrong, is they're trying to export their tax load. If you have an export economy, what you're trying to do is export your tax load to the extent the market allows you to somebody else, whether it's another domestic state or it's a foreign country. Oregon is proportionally to our economy, is the largest export state on the West Coast, and we are primarily an export state. Where sales factor works well is for companies that sell more products out of state than they sell in state. That's the reality. And keep in mind, any company, regardless of where they're primarily located and have the manufacturing plants, if they have a tax nexus in Oregon so that they'll pay taxes, they will pay more taxes in Oregon if you're using a single factor than under the current factor. If you have an Oregon company that primarily sells outside, they will likely pay less. So it's a balancing act, and Paul and the staff have got a pretty good run on what that looks like. But I think the value judgments you're going to have to make is, I suppose, one of fairness. The system that it is now is not necessarily equal across the board, but it's a balancing act. And the other one is, do you think that you'll offset the revenue loss by gains in the future? And do you think the state will gain in terms of other industries maybe going someplace else and doing their investment if you don't make a change? So that's sort of the bottom line to it from the way we looked at it as a policy consideration. Obviously, our committee and the Senate came to the conclusion that it was good state policy to do this, and that we hoped, and frankly we thought, that we would not see the revenue loss that's predicted from a static analysis, and in fact the investment would hopefully turn cash positive by the time we were fully implemented. Thank you. I'd be happy to respond to questions or let someone who really understands it talk about it.
Thank you, Senator. I thought you did a good job. And are there any questions from the committee?
Well, thank you. I'm going to get back next door to work then. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator. As Senator Beyer did say, this is a five-year phase-in going to a super-weighted sales factor. I would like to introduce to the record a letter from the Department of Oregon Department of Economic Development that was delivered to you, Mr. Chair, today. The substantive, they couldn't take a position on the bill per se due to the revenue impact, which is why this bill is going down to Ways and Means if it fares from this committee. But it does confirm that over time, we believe this change in corporate tax structure would tend to encourage investment and expansion. And we believe that's what we're talking about today, investment and expansion of Oregon-based businesses so that we can diversify our economy. With that, Mr. Chair, I think what I'd like to do is come back in a few minutes with Matt and review the study that was done by the governor's task force, but now let the industry experts from Nike and Tech and ESCO talk to that, if that's okay with you.
That sounds fine.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. My name is Dennis Peterson. I'm the tax director at Nike. I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you this morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This bill is important to Oregon companies, and that's why we're here. The passage of Senate Bill 1275 would put Oregon on the map as a state that wants to attract and retain business. Many states have already gotten a head start by making this change to the single-factor apportionment method. As this bill moves forward, Oregon is getting closer to being the first state in the West to adopt this method, and thereby gain advantage over our neighboring states in the competition for business investment. The package of information that's being passed out to you now contains some things I'd like to point out, and I'll be mentioning a couple of them as I might speak here. under the letter is the colored map that's been referred to a couple times this morning already. It's kind of important that you keep that in mind and refer to that, because it does show that that the states are moving the single factors where they're located. There is a domino effect going on here, starting in the Midwest. And you'll notice that Wisconsin, for example, is colored blue, meaning if they're thinking about going the single factor. And that state in particular just recently announced, I think they're in fact going to do it. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. And Oregon, as you see, we had that colored green. The map was prepared a couple months ago. Oregon is a double-weighted hill. But I think with what we're doing here today, that one should be blue and hopefully on its way to becoming the family colored state. So that's the map. This legislation will make Oregon more attractive to business because the disincentive to invest in our state will be removed. Paul Warner, and you've heard a lot about this already, that the revenue projections by their nature come out negative because it's a static look at the situation. I think, as you all know, what's important to keep in mind here is what the dynamic model would show, and we all expect there would be revenue growth as a result of this bill. I think the other states have experienced this, and there's been some studies done that show that, in fact, that economic development does occur as a result of this change. I think we all expected Oregon's experience to be no different than these other states. In this material, also, I've given you a copy of the University of Chicago study that was done for the state of Illinois. That study showed that they projected a 3% growth in jobs and an additional $200 million in revenue as a direct result of this adoption of the single-factor method. And then the most recent example I referred to in Wisconsin is rather interesting. It was publicized in a May 10th article in Business Week, and that article is in your packet as well. It describes the title of the article, How Milwaukee Landed a Big One, and it describes how Wisconsin enticed Rockefeller International, a $7 billion company, to locate their headquarters in Wisconsin, which is California to Wisconsin. And the article specifically says that it was the single factor apportionment method that Tommy Thompson promised that put them over the edge and actually made their final decision to locate in Wisconsin. if you want to see that article, it's the end step on the second page. It actually talks about the single factor apportionment. But anyway, as the Rockwell example demonstrates, and companies like Nike and those here today can say that when a company looks for a state in which to locate a plant or facility, the tax burden associated with the various states being considered is one of the several key factors examined. I won't go through all the complex details of how the single factor comes into play, but just simply say that when we compare one state to another, the states that have already adopted the single factor method has an important advantage. When I talked to the Senate committee about this bill, I went through an example of a company like Nike that when we make a decision on where to invest and create a new plant, if we compare Oregon to another state like Texas that is a single factor state, I think you might be surprised by how the numbers play out. If we were to put that investment in Texas, Oregon liability would drop under the current law because Oregon considers property and payroll in the apportionment. So Oregon liability drops, our Texas liability doesn't change. Whereas if we look at the other side, put the investment in Oregon, you get another bad effect for Oregon. Our Oregon tax actually goes up because now we have more Oregon property, so more income gets portioned to Oregon. But on the other hand, our Texas liability stays the same. So no matter how you look at it, when you compare Oregon to a state that has gone to the single factor, Oregon doesn't fare very well. So by making this change, it will put Oregon in a very good position for attracting new investment. I want to talk a few minutes about some other things that this bill would do. In addition to encouraging economic development, it would also have the effect of diversifying Oregon's tax base. Under the single factor apportionment method, the corporate income tax liability spread more evenly among all the companies selling into Oregon. The tax base would be less reliant on the success of Oregon-based companies and more reflective of the U.S. economy, as corporate income is apportioned to Oregon based solely on sales. Paul Warner referred to this in his comments this morning where he says that there's 57 large companies whose liability would go up under this method compared to the other one. Those 57 companies would represent diversity for Oregon because we rely more on their income rather than just the few companies in Oregon that are based here that we rely heavily on now. If we go through economic downturns, this method would soften the blow because you'd be spread out among all companies in the U.S. that sell into Oregon. Senate Bill 1275 is also about fairness. Under the bill, corporate income taxes will be based on access to the Oregon marketplace, and the tax penalty associated with property and payroll will be eliminated. But keep in mind that while it does remove the penalty on property and payroll, the companies pay many taxes besides just the corporate income tax. In exchange for all of our state and local services, we pay real and personal property taxes, we pay employment taxes, excise taxes, and local transportation district taxes. Senate Bill 1275 will not change the way that those taxes are levied. So in total, when you look at the total tax structure in Oregon, Senate Bill 1275 will result in a more fair tax structure for Oregon and actually leveling of the playing field. In summary, I'd just like to say that a proactive adoption, because time is of the essence on this change, that adoption of the single factor apportionment method would create an economic development tool for Oregon and would work to do three things. First, attract and retain business investment, diversify Oregon's tax base, and send a message throughout the U.S. that Oregon is open for business. For these reasons, Nike supports passage of Senate Bill 1275. Could you please do answer questions or you might want to hear from the others first.
Right.
The panel here, the whole panel.
Thank you, Dennis.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Ryan Unruh, and I'm the Corporate Tax Director at Tektronix. On behalf of Tektronix, I'm proud and honored to be here today before you and testifying in support of Bill 1275. As many of you know, Tektronix was founded in 1946 and has since been a pioneer in establishing Oregon as a base for a flourishing electronics industry, an industry that is now number one employer in the state. Importantly, Senate Bill 1275 provides the committee today with the unique pioneering opportunity of economic development, specifically to make Oregon a competitive leader by proactively strengthening its value chain versus subordinating itself to the value chain of other states. I think what has been testified so far and presentations made, this is evident by being the leader amongst especially the western states in this area. Quite simply, passage of this law would put Oregon into a commanding position among states by encouraging businesses to develop and expand within the state. It is evidenced by empirical data, which will be presented shortly, that behavior is influenced by tax legislation. More and more today, one of the top five areas of economic site location is taxation. What this bill does is it sends a very clear message to multi-state corporate taxpayers that if you're selling into Oregon and making substantial income, you better have significant operations in Oregon. Otherwise, you will pay. And this is exactly the approach I believe you want, because it's fundamentally good for Oregon. It does encourage the type of corporate behavior that you most want, and that is economic development. As a side, in 1984, Tektronix pension plan had purchased and began development of a very large build-to-suit business park named Dawson Creek Park, and that's located in Hillsboro, Oregon. The facility, although heavily marketed, remained fully available with no tenants until about 1993. Today, about 6 years later, the park is sold out and there's no available space. The Oregon business climate has improved remarkably during this time, and fundamentally the state began its strategic investment program to attract inward investment. And the moral of this is that the timing, I believe, is everything. And the time for change is now, and that is to raise the competitive bar amongst the western states and Oregon being a leader in that area. As mentioned, it is unfortunate. The bill has been scored under a static economic model and what we believe is void of any sort of behavioral changes that's resulting from this change legislation. And as a chief tax executive, again, for a major U.S. multinational corporation, I can assure you that companies do respond to tax legislation in a way that you would think. Accordingly, after passage of this measure, Oregon should see additional expansion of its tax base as companies expand in, relocate to, and develop a presence in Oregon. Overall tax receipts should increase, not just corporate income tax, but overall tax base, the employment of individuals and other types of taxes levied. OTR has provided testimony to the Senate, and which will be presented again, that the overall tax receipts for states that have implemented these changes have been both positive and dramatic. Together, I believe we have a responsibility to make Oregon a leader, a competitive leader, and we do not want to be followers. I believe we should not let Oregon's value chain be a weak link that breaks the economic development that we so much want to achieve. Please vote yes on Senate Bill 1275. It strengthens the Oregon value chain and I believe soundly promotes economic development. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Dale McCaffey, Corporate Tax Manager of ESCO Corporation. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 1275 on behalf of the Oregon Metals Industry Council. The Oregon Metals Industry Council represents 15 metal companies in our state, and the metals industry is the third biggest industry in the state of Oregon. ESCO Corporation is one of the Oregon's largest steel manufacturers. We were founded in 1913 in Portland, Oregon. Our company is a world leader in steel technology, providing innovative metal products and alloys for many industries. Our company has survived some of the most difficult times in our country's history. We've been through the Great Depression, world wars, international trade disputes, and the more recent Asian financial crisis. We have watched the stock market rise and fall, and we've been through our own difficulties. We've been through a lot, and we've experienced it all from our headquarters here in Oregon. Through it all, our company has grown, yet today business is much more competitive. Like other Oregon businesses, our success is tied to a number of factors. Some of these are international, while others are local. One of these factors is Oregon's tax structure. The marketplace for the products we produce is extremely competitive. Increasingly, we compete against companies who enjoy various benefits provided by a state or country in which they are based. These benefits are often a favorable tax structure, which decreases their tax liability and thereby increases their operating margins. This directly enhances their ability to be competitive in more markets. It should be no surprise that these benefits often come at our expense. Today you have the opportunity to level the playing field for Oregon companies and help us maintain our competitiveness. Senate Bill 1275 would provide a real benefit to Oregon companies, such as metal companies, who employ over 60,000 workers in their state. These companies provide family wages at 20 to 65% higher than the average wage. By approving this legislation and moving Oregon to a single sales factor, we will directly stimulate economic development, increasing manufacturing and job creation. We also contend it will increase overall tax receipts. I disagree with estimates that indicate such a shift will result in a potential loss of corporate income tax revenue. Based on 25 years of tax experience, I know that a single sales factor formula greatly increases a company's tax liability that has no plant or payroll in the state. I'm also astounded that there are only 71 companies filing in Oregon that have $1 billion or more in federal taxable income. I would think there are significantly more companies with liabilities, such as the Fortune 500, that should be filing income tax reports in Oregon. I also believe this legislation can increase both corporate income tax revenues as well as personal income tax revenues. You may recall that in 1989, when the legislature shifted Oregon to the double-weighted sales formula, revenue analysts predicted the change would not result in a positive effect upon the state. Now, with the benefit of experience, we know the shift was extremely beneficial. Between 92 and 96, income tax receipts in Oregon surged. We believe the increase is due in part to the change from the single-weighted sales factor to the double-weighted sales factor. Personal income tax revenues will also increase with creation of new high-paying manufacturing jobs due to a more friendly corporate tax structure. Single sales factor formula will enable Oregon companies to remain competitive in national and international markets. It will strengthen our economy and increase both corporate and personal income tax receipts to the state. I encourage you to consider the benefits this legislation will provide to Oregon's economy, our companies, and our workforce. I ask for your support for Senate Bill 1275. Thank you for your time and attention this morning, and I would be pleased to answer any questions.
Hey, thank you. Each of you, are there any questions? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you. Mr. Peterson, it seems like these days, often the choice that companies are making is not whether to locate in Oregon versus other states in terms of manufacturing, but whether to locate in the United States versus in other countries. And it seems that that choice is often based on things like wage rates and protective labor legislation. So, How would that dynamic be affected if we were to adopt these tax changes?
Well, for example, a company like Nike, there's still a lot of jobs. I think we have 15,000 jobs in the U.S., and those jobs are the types that are not going to move outside the U.S. Maybe Canada because it's nearby, but I think you're referring to Asia and other countries. But there's a lot of jobs that will always be in the U.S., and it's a matter of which of the 50 states do we put those jobs in. In the broader scope, in the bigger picture, like the manufacturing jobs, it makes some sense that those should be in Asia because that's where you can most economically produce the types of products that we sell. But like I say, we have 15,000 jobs in the U.S., and those jobs are not really at risk. They're not the types of jobs that we'd move outside the U.S. So we're talking about where do you place those 15,000 within the U.S., and this bill would make Oregon much more attractive.
So you're not really suggesting that we will see a huge growth in manufacturing jobs in the
state? There's still a lot of manufacturing in the U.S., and we're saying that this bill would make Oregon more attractive vis-a-vis other states. And in so doing, it also makes Oregon more attractive to foreign countries, but there's a lot of other factors that go into that decision of international investment versus U.S. investment. The taxes is one there as well, but we're primarily looking at if you make this the first cut and say you want to invest in somewhere in the United States, this just makes Oregon more attractive compared to another state. That's primarily what we're talking about today.
Mr. Chair, may I add?
Sure.
In response? Recently, Tektronix was looking at location of an ink plant, and this is what I guess from a macroeconomic standpoint, you can understand that there is one of country location. Primarily, one of the top five on-site location is location savings. One of those being, can you put yourself closer to your main supplier? Several things being OEM suppliers, and today those happen to be in Asia countries. So there is that aspect of macro. I think the understanding of once you have concluded that you're going to locate within the United States, we most recently did a study to where do we put from a contingency standpoint location of a second ink plant. And this is exactly the analysis we as a company went through. And you try on the top five to make sure that Oregon is the majority, 3 out of the 5, to be attractive. And this is something that does put you in that favorable position vis-a-vis other states as an attractive location once there is either relocation, expansion within the United States. Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much for coming today. Next is Gary Odegaard at Evans.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Matt Evans. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Tax Research. OTR was created more than 60 years ago. Our mission is to encourage efficient and economical government through research and public education. We are a nonpartisan organization which seeks to provide information to policymakers and the public on which they can base decisions. Senate Bill 1275 provides this committee with a number of opportunities. We detailed some of these in our recent publication, Single Sales Factor Apportionment, an Economic Development Incentive for Oregon's Future. Each of you has previously received a copy of this report, and I am including it as part of my prepared testimony here today. The structure of state taxation of corporate income is changing, and has been for most of this decade. Driving this change has been unprecedented competition for new plants and expansion of existing plants across the country. Although it is certainly not their only consideration, businesses look carefully at state tax structures when seeking to locate facilities. National accounting firms are aggressively counseling business clients on state and local taxes as a factor to consider when planning new locations. Legislatures are increasingly seeking out tax policies to promote broad economic development rather than creating special programs to attract or retain certain kinds of businesses. One of the most common strategies is an alteration of the multi-state income tax apportionment formula. Legislatures across the country have realized that by adopting a super-weighted or single sales factor formula, they can create a significant economic development advantage over other states. OTR first reported on the shift to the single sales factor 1 year ago. Since that time, 7 states have begun seriously considering shifting to a single sales factor. Should they do so, they would join the 8 states that currently have either a single sales factor or weight sales more than 50%. An interesting case study of a state considering this change is Minnesota. That state first went to a super-weighted sales factor of 70% in 1939. This year, the Minnesota legislature considered going to a single sales factor. Although they are neutral on the bill, the Minnesota Taxpayers Association reports that the state is almost forced to consider this change. Why? Minnesota's neighbors, Michigan, Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, are already at or near single factors, and Wisconsin will be shortly as well. Minnesota has found itself unable to compete for plant locations and expansions. Now, because Minnesota has allowed itself to fall behind its neighbors on this issue, the best they can hope for is to level playing field. As Dan Salamone of MTA told me, it's like an arms race. The economic development impact of the move to super-weighted or single sales factor formulas is already being felt. In 1997, according to Site Selection, there were 10,481 plant locations or expansions in the United States. The 7 states with single or super-weighted sales factors had an average of over 500 new and expanded facilities. The 24 states with a double-weighted sales factor averaged less than half that many. The remaining states with equal factors or no state income tax at all had 1/10 as many. The clear evidence is that states with single or super-weighted sales factors have a considerable advantage over states that do not. Perhaps most striking is what the site selection data tell us about the competitive position of our own state. Again, there were 10,481 plant locations or expansions in the entire United States in 1997. Of these, Oregon garnered 13 0.12%. Robert Audi, a corporate location expert from a large accounting firm in Chicago, recently noted that Oregon is marginally competitive nationally because of our high corporate income tax. In 1997, Oregon had the 17th highest corporate income tax collections per capita. Two of our neighboring states, Washington and Nevada, do not tax corporate income at all. The other two, Idaho and California, have the same factor formula that Oregon does. We are currently reasonably competitive with Idaho. In the site selection study, Idaho managed only 8 plant locations and expansions. However, we're at a considerable disadvantage with our other neighbors. Washington had 81 plant locations and expansions in 1997, Nevada 166, and California 973. Naturally, as states have begun considering a shift or are shifting to single sales factor formulas, independent studies have been done on the potential fiscal impacts. Austin Goolsbee and Edward Maydew of the University of Chicago's Graduate School of Business provided the Minnesota Taxpayers Association with information on the impact of that state's potential move from 70 to 100% sales. Professors Goolsbee and Maydew found that the move would create 9,000 new jobs in the manufacturing sector and an additional 35,000 jobs in the non-manufacturing sector of the Minnesota economy. They further found that these new jobs would create a minimum of $43 million in new individual income tax collections annually. The University of Chicago did a similar study for the state of Illinois when it was considering moving to a single sales factor. As with Minnesota, the potential positive impact was found to be substantial. After 3 years, total job growth was expected to be 3% greater, with additional state revenue generated of $200 million. These studies make use of a technology that is not available in Oregon, as Paul mentioned earlier, so-called dynamic scoring. In other words, when the University of Chicago evaluated the single sales factor proposals, they took into account predicted changes in behavior by businesses seeking to locate or expand plants in Minnesota and Illinois. Our Legislative Revenue Office is unable to take these factors into account and so uses a static model, which assumes taxpayers will continue acting as they have no matter what changes may be made in the tax system. Finally, I want to cite a little Oregon history in reference to SB 1275. 2 decades ago, Oregon's economy was much different than it is today. You know the saying, as goes General Motors, so goes the country. Well, in Oregon, in the late 1970s and early 1980s, the saying could well have been, as goes timber, so goes Oregon. Our economy was timber dependent. If you were living in this state at that time, you know what happened. The timber industry went through a withering recession, and it took our state 6 years to recover. Since then, we've done a good job of diversifying our economy, but not good enough. The information provided to you today by the Legislative Revenue Office shows that a large percentage of Oregon's corporate income taxes come from only a handful of companies. Our economy is more broadly diversified across industries now than it was 20 years ago, but we are still far too dependent on a small base of companies for our continued budget well-being. The kind of economic diversification that we should have already exists in states with sales-only apportionment factors. Enacting SB 1275 will lead to significant economic benefits for Oregon in the near term and the long term, not the least of which is a broadening of the kinds of companies and jobs Oregon is able to attract. The economic development benefits available from passage of S. 1275, however, will not be available forever. If we delay, Oregon will find itself facing this very same issue again in the not-too-distant future. If this committee does not confront this issue in this session, you may find yourselves confronting it as Minnesota is, just trying not to lose any more ground. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Gary Odegaard, and I'm the U.S. Region Tax Manager for Nike, Inc. I've been working for Nike for about 15 years. Most of those years have been in the area of state and local taxation as well as federal. I have a pretty thorough understanding of all 50 states' taxation. And what I can tell you is I've been personally involved in state tax surveys where we actually went out and took a sample of, say, 10 states and then rated them on all sorts of different factors, income taxes, property taxes, sales and use taxes, all the various components that make up the tax base. And I can tell you this, that it would be a significant competitive advantage to Oregon to move the single-factor sales methodology and remove the disincentive of locating property and payroll in the state. It would provide a significant advantage over our neighboring state, Washington, which doesn't have an income tax but has a B&O tax. They provide incentives for manufacturing, but they're exempt from the sales and use tax. They have an exemption, sort of like a credit, but they don't have that for the service sector, so which is a significant component of our economy. Representative Rosenbaum, you were talking about manufacturing jobs. I think I was reading recently that I think 60% of the U.S. economy is service-based, and by moving to this type of apportionment factor methodology, you would encourage a significant amount of those types of companies, the biotech, the high-tech, the companies in software development, hospitals, financial institutions, the ones that are predominantly involved in the service sector would find that Oregon would be a very attractive state to locate, say, their headquarters or the service sector component of their business. I do have extensive experience in state and local taxation. I'd be happy to answer any technical questions or about any of how the other states operate versus Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, my name is Paul Phillips, and I represent Nike. The Senate Bill 1275 debate in the Senate focused on what's best for all of Oregon. There was lots of discussion this session and in previous sessions with regard to economic diversity statewide. This bill comes to you with the support of the electronics industry, the banking industry, the manufacturing industry, and Oregon-based industries as diverse as Nike, Adidas, Willamette, Sequent, Tektronix, and Esko, as well as others. But the thing I'd like to bring to your attention today, or back to your attention, is a review of Oregon's tax system that was done in June of 1998. Now, the reason I bring it back to your attention is I'm sure Mr. Warner gave you a briefing on this 4 or 5 months ago, but a few things have occurred in between those times that might make the immediate recall of this data a little less opportune than I would appreciate as it relates to this bill. The Governor's Tax Review Technical Committee, chaired by John Mitchell of U.S. Bank Corp, came up with some interesting things. The executive summary starts the debate, and the debate is the context in which this bill should be considered. And it reads in part that Oregon's economy, demographic, social, and regulatory environment, as well as overall public finance, have changed in fundamental ways since 1980. Now, in 1980, the timber industry was the dominant economic force. Now the economy is more balanced with high-tech manufacturing and service playing a predominant role. That's important, especially if you take in context the discussions of the unitary tax change in 1983, when I was here originally, and then the changes we made in 1989. The key findings were interesting. It talks about Oregon's economy being more diverse and stable than it was a decade ago. But it led it to a conclusion that the issues identified by the committee identified revenue stability as the key tax policy issue for the state. And stability is what 1275 will bring, we believe. It also made a couple of key policy recommendations. One, to improve the tools for tax analysis. So it wouldn't be a debate over the static versus dynamic, that you'd actually be able to have that. And then the third recommendation said that there should be periodic comprehensive reviews of the tax system. We believe that that is consistent with what we're suggesting, what we're bringing forward to you today in the Senate discussed and Senator Beyer brought up. If you look at the information that Matt put forward and the corporate folks said and what's going on around the nation, a periodic review would say we should make adjustments to reflect what's going on nationally and globally. The governor's charge to this committee was interested in knowing what we need to change knowing if we need to change our tax structure in terms of fairness, stability, and economic incentives. This issue is one of fairness and stability. The committee went through a lot of information, which I won't go through, but it did talk about the changing economy, and it went from high-tech to timber and the reasons that changed. It also talked about the service producing economies changing and the lessening impact of manufacturing and agriculture. But what it also, I would say, anecdotally pointed out was that those issues and keeping those business sectors strong and healthy in this economy is good for the entire state. The report also, or review also, talked about corporate income taxes. And then it talked about the fact that it had been relatively flat for 15 years and then more than doubled between 92 and 96. Now, there's a lot of global reasons for that. But the main issue that kicked in 91 was a change in the corporate tax structure to the double-weighted system. And that had a dramatic impact in Oregon. And that, if you watch what happened in 93 and 91, we believe that certainly by phasing this in over the next 5 years and going to 100% system, you'll witness the same type of dynamic growth. The other issues it talked about was the high-tech industry emerging as the largest taxpayer. Well, certainly that's the case, and certainly this change would be one that would adjust and address that industry. The report gave a number of issues or addressed a number of issues, one of which was stability. And there were three criteria that they put forth in economic stability and what economic stability meant. And what they focused on was how that addressed the revenue stream of tax revenue and how a stable market changed the flux or fluidity of that system and was better for the state in the long term. It talked about economic stability looking historically and looking prospectively, and talked about the need for diversity and a tax structure and a revenue system based off tax sources that addressed that. That goes back to the comments that Matt said. If these other states are moving in this direction, wouldn't it be better to lead rather than follow those changes? And then it talked about revenue stability as a policy goal and making sure that the system is making sure that your system is not unresponsive to change and growth. Then it went through measuring stability, and there are a number of ways to measure stability in the sense of growth and other things. And it has a summary that's interesting in the fact that things are going well now in the state of Oregon. But in fact, that we have not seen a major blip in the economy or any kind of revenue change into our system. And therefore, we really don't know how stable that structure is, and perhaps that was an issue to deal with. There were a number of other factors that the committee, this review went through, talking about fluctuations, talking about changes, talking about rapid growth in the income taxes and how corporate taxes should be addressed. I would, rather than go through those in detail with you, I would just go back to the final chapter of it, what it talked about behavioral effects of taxation. And taxation can, in fact, influence behavior. And it talked about what it does for those who invest, the business owner, as well as it does the capital investment and natural resource sides of things, and what externalities have as an effect on business decisions. And if you look at the goals that we're trying to bring forward in this bill of stability, diversity, and long-term growth, and you lay that against the policies of the state that Mr. Scott put forth in his letter, the two marry up beautifully. And I just ask you, Mr. Chair, to call that to memory. In summary, the question that we put forward to you is, what does this bill do? And it changes the apportionment factor for multi-state businesses. We believe it's an economic development issue, a business recruitment issue, a job creation issue. Who benefits? We believe Oregon benefits, all of Oregon, and its ability to retain and recruit jobs. The question is, why now? Why don't we just wait? Well, with key Midwest states moving towards a sales factoring system only, Oregon can lead and position itself on the West. Well, if this is so good, who's going to be in opposition to it. And I did look at the other states that have had this system. And you will see that national auto manufacturers, oil companies, tobacco industries, those from out of state that sell into states generally oppose these factoring. But we believe the benefits to Oregon businesses, based on the review that was done just last year and our findings throughout the country, would warrant a passage of 1275. And with that, Mr. Chair, when the appropriate time comes forward, we'd appreciate you moving this down to Ways and Means so that if it does go forward, it can be balanced against the other issues of the budget. And the reason it has a revenue impact, even though this starts next session, is the way corporate filings are done. It will, in fact, have a revenue impact this biennium, and it's one that delayed against the other charges to the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Thank you. I believe Brian Doherty and Tom Gallagher are up next.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm very unhappy to be here today testifying on this bill. Brian Doherty had to go to another appointment at 9 o'clock, so he can't be up here with me. Very uncomfortable to have the corporate giants of the state of Oregon sitting behind me. I'm here representing pretty much the foot soldiers. All kind of reference to the fact that I represent the automobile manufacturers and ARCO gasoline. There are other people who are going to be impacted by this bill, like beer and clothing and other people who manufacture out of state and sell their products here in state. We're certainly not the driving economic engine in the state of Oregon as these great companies behind me are. But we do sell quite a bit of material inside the state. And I'm here to oppose the bill for a couple of reasons. The first reason is it not only provides economic development, and I think that was what mostly they talked about, it also provides significant tax reductions for a number of companies in state, at the same time raising taxes for a lot of other corporations. If you look back in the back page of the revenue handout, you'll see that the numbers of returns that are winners and the number of returns that are losers aren't quite equal. I would love to support a bill here that encouraged economic development for the manufacturing and industrial segment of the state of Oregon and did not shift those taxes onto other parts of the corporate taxing citizens of the state. I wish we could do something like that, but this bill doesn't do it. It does raise taxes. For two of the companies I represent, the tax increases is essentially double because they don't have property and payroll inside the state, and they would pay 100% on sales tax. It raises taxes, but it doesn't reduce, and using the static model, I'm sorry that that's all you have. Dynamic models are much more exciting, but using the static model, it raises taxes and reduces net income. I'm assuming that when we have a dynamic model, we'll factor in economic growth and recessions and all those other elements that produce part of the miracle of economic development here in the state so that it won't just be static. It will also reflect some of the negatives. But under this revenue forecast, we raise taxes significantly for a lot of corporations without raising the net revenue of the state. Those companies that I represent will, quite frankly, try to pass on the tax increases inside the state here. We're not exporting those taxes. We're transferring them on to the people that buy cars, buy gasoline, that buy other products that are manufactured out of the state. Where there are competitive reasons why that can't be done, that'll just, you know, be a tax shift on the other corporation. But as much as we can, I think we'll try to see a tax shift in the state. I'd like to address one other point, and that's that we need to be the first and the leader on this. Well, there are only seven states that have a superweighted tax and some six or seven others that are looking at it. So we certainly are not behind the curve like we were on changes in the unitary tax back in the early 1980s. We do have some time to think and feel our way through this. Paul said this is tax reform or tax review, and it certainly is a significant tax change in a very interesting time inside of the Oregon
picture right now. I don't think any of us in the corporate side are not watching closely what the governor and what is being discussed in the legislature in terms of budget, in terms of what's going to happen in the budget in the next biennium. I also don't think any of us have missed the significant debate about the tax shift from corporations to income tax, individual income taxpayers, arguments that are consistently raised in front of this committee and other committees. I'm wondering where we are in the year 2001 if we've just doubled taxes for a significant share of the corporate income taxpayers, given significant income tax reductions, business income tax reductions for another set of the taxpayers, when we go into the discussion in the interim and look forward to the revenue problems of the year 2001. I'd assume I'd like to end by saying that there's got to be another way to do this economic development. I was part of and sat through the debates on the unitary tax, and I understand why at that point in time, in that particular economy, we were late and why it made sense. And it is possible you're going to want to move toward a single-weighted sales tax factor, and I know that this one does phase it in over 5 years, and I think that's a significant help. I also think it would make some sense if you looked at not having it go automatically to a single-weighted factor, if you looked at other ways in which you might balance out the winners and the losers on this bill. I certainly don't want to oppose the economic development. I don't want to oppose the needs of the state and the needs of the corporations behind me. I just want to raise the issue, which we didn't do on the Senate side, that there are significant losers in this bill. I'm sure you won't have any questions, so thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Are there any questions? Jim Merkley, do you have a question? I'm moving your microphone.
Such a long list, but I think I'll wait until we have all testimony. I also apologize. I need to step out for a while.
Tom?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I did want to ask you, I mean, obviously the map and some of the other testimony shows that where manufacturing is really a major part of the economy, the states are going that way. And, you know, this is kind of a loaded question, but most of the states that have, you know, automobile manufacturing, for example, have already done this, thereby advantaging themselves in their home states. And, I mean, isn't this something that we should be looking at doing as well?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I saw that statistic. I'm shocked and fired off a letter to the corporation suggesting that they're probably out of line on that particular position they've taken. But in less seriousness, I've demonstrated my tax ignorance in front of this committee over a number of years, and I think I shall try to do it again here today for this particular committee. When you have a state like Michigan, which automobiles, let's just take that one, which has gone to a 90% tax weighted factor, if they have, being such a large manufacturing state, if they have a huge in-state tax on that particular industry and the bulk of their product is sold out of state, in essence, they're exporting the tax. And in essence, in this case, when you buy an automobile that's taxed in Michigan, you pay the tax and so on. There is a great deal of argument going on in the Midwest in the states, and I happen to come from the Midwest, and I know that Nebraska is not a hotbed of manufacturing. I was struck by all the testimony in Minnesota, while it has 3M and some other significant corporations there and so forth. Those in Iowa, as Caterpillar and others, they either pass on the price of that in their product out of state, or they change the sales tax factor in retaliation or in recognition of what's happening there. We're not in that status exactly on the West Coast. If these corporations were coming to you and saying, we are at a true economic disadvantage in selling our products because of the tax structure in this state and other states, I think that would be something we'd have to significantly listen to. I know with the automobile side, that competition did occur from the Japanese and from the European markets. And exporting the Michigan tax and the cost of their product was a factor and an issue inside of the Michigan debate. In terms of the oil side, for example, Texas is another state that was used. ARCO doesn't produce crude in Texas. It doesn't refine in Texas, and it doesn't sell in Texas. It's a completely West Coast company. So the actions in other states are things that we have to watch, we have to keep our eye on. And the fact that automobiles
and are sold in all 50 states, like computers and other things like that, and the fact that there would be a significant tax increase in automobiles in the state of Oregon is why they oppose the tax. And I'm certain they supported it in Michigan for the same reasons that these corporations support it here. It reduces their in-state taxes. I don't see anything consistent in inconsistent in corporations looking to their best advantages in the different states.
Thank you.
Kirch?
Chairman Sobeck, committee members, I'm Kirk Copenhagen, Director of Public Affairs of Longview Fiber Company, and I'm commenting in opposition to SB 1275 because it would nearly double our company's state income tax. I, like Tom Gallagher, hate to be in this position with good company friends that we have across the state that make up the proponents of this bill. But we are clearly one of the losers, and we come forth as an example of some of the companies that perhaps are somewhat hidden in the debate so far on this issue. Longview Fiber's been a longtime Oregon corporate citizen, having acquired much of our timberlands in the last 3 to 4 decades. Today, we're one of the largest private timberland owners in the state, managing approximately 1/3 of 1 million acres and 6 tree farms in western Oregon and the Columbia Gorge. I might add that our timberlands are managed for on a sustained yield basis. Although we directly employ only 100 people in Oregon, indirectly, we provide work for about 85 Oregon contractor-type companies in our timberlands. Many of these are independent logging contractors that have been fully employed for many years. Others are part-time contractors who perform a variety of forestry and road construction tasks. Now, we grow and harvest and sell a majority of our logs in Oregon and sell them to Oregon sawmills. Now, we've been providing these mills with needed wood fiber for several decades. As to flowing money from Longview Fiber into the Oregon economy, Longview Fiber annually buys $50 to $60 million in wood chips at market prices from Oregon solid wood product plants. These are used for paper making in our Longview paper mill. A large volume of these chips are made from leftovers from lumber manufactured from the logs that we, Longview Fiber, supply those mills. And I'd like to add, our company has done its share and then some in cooperative salmon recovery and stream restoration projects. We provide biologists, foresters, large investments in dollars, assisting both the Oregon Salmon Plan as well as the our own voluntary projects on our timberlands. And Mr. Chairman, we feel like an Oregon company, although we are headquartered in Longview. Again, we're a long-time standing contributor to the state and its economy through our providing large indirect employment, the needed wood fiber, raw material for mills. We spend $60 million a year in Oregon for chip purchases, and also, again, through our extensive work and investments in helping enhance public benefits like salmon and stream recovery. After the prelim analysis by our tax management, it appears that SB 1275 would cost Longview Fiber at least $500,000 annually in a typical business year. And considering Longview Fiber's long and positive history with the state, we don't feel that this bill would be fair to our company, and we urge your committee to not pass this bill, and hopefully there can be some other alternative here and some study on the total effects on various companies like ourselves.
Thank you, Kirk. Any questions? It appears that you're a little different than the oil company in that you're not bringing product in, but you're still doing a substantial amount of business in the state. You just don't happen to have manufacturing in the state.
That's right.
Primarily the issue?
Yeah. Chairman Schulbeck, we're pretty unique that way. We do sell in a smaller amount, very small amount, paper packaging from our Longview mill and container plant into the state. But the bulk of our work, business in Oregon has to do with timberlands related. We have small chip plants at Boardman and the Dalles, Fox and I. We have a small container office in Beaver. But indirectly, we employ probably in the excess of 700 independent contractor employees that have worked for Longview Fiber virtually full-time or part-time for decades.
But the exporting of your product comes from the state of Washington mostly rather than Oregon.
The product comes out of Washington. Yes, and again, it's small potatoes compared to the what our timberlands impact is on the state where we sell a majority of our logs to Oregon sawmills.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Craig Hanneman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Craig Hanneman, Willamette Industries. I'm going to abbreviate my remarks. In the
I apologize that we lost most of our, all of our Democrat members. I didn't know they had an event scheduled that they were all leaving.
Not a problem. I'd like to provide a piece of perspective that's from the other side of the forest products industry. Willamette Industries began as the Willamette Valley Lumber Company at the turn of the century and has grown into one of the 10 largest forest products companies in the nation. But today, out of our 14,000 employees, 4,000 are in this state. Out of our 1.7 million acres, 600,000 are in this state. And we have 23 of our 100 manufacturing facilities in the state of Oregon, along with our corporate headquarters. We support 1275, not because it has a huge economic gain to the company, but more for the public policy position and the statement that that would make. I might add that in spite of the fact that Willamette has tax nexus with 37 other states, we have never opposed the movement towards a single sales factor in any one of those, in spite of sometimes the loss that occurs to us in those states. And that's what I wanted to talk about just briefly to share with you some details of Willamette's tax filing in those states. First, let me just say, if I were to title this bill, if you gave me the assignment of writing the title, I would call it Turnabout is Fair Play Bill, because you might be interested to know that in those 37 states that Willamette has tax nexus with, four have single sales factor, 100% sales. One of them is Nebraska, one is Iowa, other is Texas. I might mention that Michigan, which is at 90%, in those states, let me give you some examples of what we pay compared to what we would pay if they had an equal-weighted three-factor formula. Nebraska, 288% more today as a result of our high sales into the state and relatively low employment and low property that we own. Iowa, we pay today on our income tax return filed in that state 287% more. This is why the other companies are here opposing something similar in Oregon and do not like the turnabout factor. Michigan, 262% for Willamette Industries. Texas, 182%, and the list goes on. We sell lots of product, but have little property or payroll against those numbers. The homeboys obviously have an advantage. The fact of the matter, this is not a tax break, as it has been reported in some of the newspapers. It's a tax shift. There are winners, there are losers, as there always are when these kind of policy changes occur. A shift that increases taxes on companies not invested in Oregon and reduces for those who are is the way it works. We consider that pro-business, we consider that pro-Oregon, and we think that is in the best of all possible worlds for the people of this state. That's my comment.
Thank you, Craig. Thank you. Are there any other questions from the remaining committee members? had one other question, Paul. I don't know if you or Dennis or somebody else can answer this, but there was a question that was asked, I think Representative Rosenbaum brought it up about the offshore manufacturing. And I just wonder if you'd comment on the impact that this bill would have on corporate headquarters versus manufacturing. Is there a particular advantage, disadvantage, or no impact in attracting corporate headquarters?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll take a first shot and then give it to Dennis. The testimony in the Senate and the discussion, the research we did, corporate headquarters were distinct beneficiaries. R&D, distributing facilities, those types were the gainers. And that's, in fact, why we discussed the situation of immediately phasing in for non-manufacturing and using that as an incentive to get those individuals here where they pay property taxes, have income taxes, and other things. But in the discussion that we've had, it seemed better to keep everybody manufacturing and non-manufacturing together. So there was a distinct benefit to bringing in a corporate headquarters and that. And then the second effect was those with facilities here would remove the disincentive for upgrading and improving those facilities. So those two issues were discussed. The comment that Representative Rosenbaum had is on national labor politics and other things. We're really talking about what's the best position once the company's decided to base in the United States, what's the best tax policy for the United States. I can't pretend or ask you to address national and global political tax policy, but we're just trying to balance it from the United States perspective.
Mr. Chairman, just make a brief comment on that. When a company decides where to locate a headquarters versus a manufacturing facility, there is a different analysis that you go through. Headquarters locations, you tend to be a little more mobile with where you place the headquarters than compared to manufacturing. When you're deciding where to place manufacturing, you have to look at a lot more factors like the availability of natural resources and the labor pool and trained labor force and those kind of things. So I think when you look at a manufacturing decision, there's a bigger picture there you have to look at before you get down to the tax analysis. But if Oregon is still in the running for a manufacturing location based on all those other factors, then I'd say the tax could be the swing vote, and Oregon would look much better under this proposal. But as compared to like a headquarter location, like I said, they're tend to be a little more mobile because you can move people easier than plants and facilities. And Oregon would definitely look better under the headquarter analysis compared to other states.
I would just point out, Mr. Chair, that Senator Beyer raised the Milwaukee issue and Governor Tommy Thompson changing or moving towards a change like we've suggested so that he could get Rockwell International's headquarters to his state. And that was the discussion there. And that was a piece that I think has been shared with your committee. Yeah, Paul says it has, from just May 10th, Business Week. So this is an issue that's going on right now today.
Any other questions?
Well, I assume a family-owned company that is based here in Oregon that is buying more property, is developing more manufacturing facilities here in state and selling primarily out of the state will do pretty well under this single factor.
Yeah. Assuming that if the company is large enough to be to have tax nexus in other states, just going outside and have some presence in the other states, then yeah, they would do well under this bill.
Hey, thank you all very much. Anybody else here to speak on Senate Bill 1275? Seeing no one, thank you all for coming today. We don't have a quorum, so we can't do business on the other two bills. We don't meet tomorrow. We're not meeting Monday. See you on Tuesday. All right.
Thanks for hanging out, Mr. Chairman.
real job.
You know what would help us? Numerical examples. Sales outside. An example. That might be everything.